The 920 KVEC Podcast Network is presented by the Slo County Real Estate Podcast with Hal Swayze. Up-to-date information on the local real estate market on your time. New episodes weekly at the podcast link at 920kvec.com and wherever you get your podcasts. California DRE 01111911.
We're in the second half. Paul Verkammen, former CNN reporter, and the incomparable Tom Likas, broadcaster, podcaster extraordinaire. They both have essays in a new book that is a salute to baseball broadcasting legend Vin Scully. And they're going to join us to talk about the book and their relationship with Mr. Scully. Next up, we put the spotlight on a group I have never heard of. I've been doing this for 32 and a half years. It is the National Association of Women-Owned Businesses. We've got Tyler Skinner and Dr. Leslie Kasanoff in studio. Ladies, good afternoon.
Hi.
Hi, Dave.
And you're both wearing hot pink. Is that is that part of the uniform?
Absolutely unplanned, actually. Nabo's color is more like a teal blue.
That's right.
So yeah. How come I haven't heard of this group?
That's a good question, and that's probably our fault.
Well, it's nobody's fault. It's just like, Tyler, what's the deal?
I think you touched on it earlier, Leslie, when we were chatting, is that, you know, we're a national organization. We serve over 12 million women business owners nationwide, and then we have 11 chapters here in California. And I think for our small but mighty chapter, we like to say that we're tiny but mighty, because we were nominated last year for Chapter of the Year at a national level.
Wow.
So we do a lot of really great work in the community. But yes, partly, are we out there doing all we can? Maybe not, but why? Because here's the bigger question. Women are doing it all. We have a lot of extra responsibilities, like raising families, running businesses. So sometimes as a volunteer board, we are looking at all the different avenues, and our strategic plan is always focused on the outreach. And we've started to really actively put that into place more now than ever this year.
That's a good answer.
Is part of that.
That's a good answer. Is this a countywide chapter?
Yes. This is a countywide chapter, yes.
Yeah. All right. And there are actually no borders between chapters. So the next closest chapter is in Santa Barbara. So actually, San Maria probably would, you know, somebody from San Maria would probably come to us.
All right. What's the website, please?
NABOCCC.org.
So yep.
NABOBO-CCC.org. Right, that's our local there. Central Coast chapter.
Who can join?
Yeah. Women business owners can join. Looking to level up. Women that are looking to level up their leadership development. Women that are looking to have a local influence with a national reach. That's really what we're all about.
All right. So, Leslie, put a plug in for your business and talk about how this organization has helped you.
Okay. So I'm a health coach and consultant, moved into that after being in chiropractic for many years, and became a certified health coach and consultant. And my business, being in NABO, has given me the opportunity to speak at a national level for a couple of webinars. It's given me the opportunity to present at a couple of the other chapters around. So it's done more to help me get the word out about what I do and who I serve.
Yeah. How about for you, Tyler?
Well, for me, it's a great story, because I jumped in on a Christmas party. And I immediately connected with a lot of the ladies there.
Then you jumped in on a Christmas party.
Yeah, someone invited me to a Christmas party at Castle Noland. And I went in there, and I go, this is really cool. These women are rad. We had a book exchange. We had a fun time. Then I get in. I join the organization. I go to one luncheon, and someone tapped me and said, hey, you know what? I think you're really fit for leadership. Would you like to be on the board? I immediately got on the board, and I've been on for the last 4 or 5 years on the board. Actively, I was past president last year. And for that, what we want to talk about is our fall leadership retreat. It's Vision and Voice. And I was able to procure a contract with our national organization for our company, because I run events. Right. And we do curated experiences and women's retreats. I was able to bring 50 women business owners from around the country to our Central Coast, to SloCal right here.
And why are they
in
coming?
The fall.
Why are they
They're coming because they've never even known about it. They didn't even know this existed, really.
And that kind of like me and this organization.
Right. Yeah. They didn't know how cool it was.
And they didn't know we exist here on the Central Coast.
They didn't know, and they're ready to come.
So what are they going to do when they get here?
They're going to do a storytelling, elevated storytelling. We're having speakers come in from Santa Barbara. We're going to do adventures all over Paso.
So it's like a private thing for the 50 women who are coming.
It is a private thing. So you have to be a member. This is a key fact. You have to be a member of NABO to be part of this retreat. So,
but if a woman were to join, she could be part of the retreat.
She can absolutely come to the retreat.
Yeah.
So talk about the here. You have to allow me. I'm the dumb guy in the room here. What are the unique challenges for a woman-owned business as opposed to a male-owned business?
Oof, Leslie, you want to take that one?
You can both comment.
Where do we begin?
I know. Just give me a sense.
Well, you know, I think you have to look at it kind of holistically, because it's not only are we women running businesses, we're women running our lives. Most of us have spouses and children we're raising and everything else on top of that, and we're running a business. So it's most people are busy, and then we're trying to run a business on top of all that. So we're finding business, making business in addition to just, you know, showing up every day.
Yeah. What do you say, Tyler?
I agree. I think that for me, being a mom of two, that's a definite challenge, is having the life work-life balance. That's a lot of things we talk about in our organization, is how to do both.
But don't men have the same thing? I'm not trying to be Phil Donahue.
They have the same thing, but I think there is something called emotional labor. There's actually a book about this. I can send it to you. It's a quiet job that women sort of default. We're like the default parent a lot of times. And sometimes there's single parents, and that's not the case. But women are the default parent. And so what happens is there's a lot of extra responsibilities, I think, like going to birthday parties and after school activities and all these things, if you are a business owner and a mom, and that's your choice. And that becomes an extra challenge, I think, and a barrier. But the other part, I think, is access to capital. That's a big one for me. I think that investing in women is those invest in everyone else. Women think of community first. They look at family, community, they look at everywhere else, right? How they can expand with those dollars. And I just don't see a lot of women asking for enough and for it. And I think that's what NABO is really helping to elevate, is getting women to be able to go to those negotiating tables and say, hey, I'm worth this. Let's do this.
This group goes all the way back to the 1970s, the national group, Leslie?
Yes, it does. Yeah. And it was first, we have our 50th anniversary coming up next year. And basically, NABO was formed back in the days before women could actually open a bank account and get a bank loan.
Remind me, because I didn't know. I knew this happened at one point. I didn't know it was that recent. Kind of embarrassing.
Yeah, it was actually 1982 or 1983, believe it or not. I was a young adult then.
Yeah.
And I was in the working world then.
Yeah.
And prior to that, women could not get a loan without their spouse's signature. They could not, they couldn't buy a car on their own.
That's right.
You know, if you were a woman in the 70s and you were a single mom, go try to buy a car. You had to pay cash for it.
There's a woman in our organization that actually told us she had to get her 16-year-old son to co-sign on a loan for her.
That's really very sad. So how's it today?
Well, legally, it's still equal. But I'll tell you what, Dave. Fast forward, that law passed in 1983. In 1991, when I opened my first chiropractic practice and I went to the bank for a loan, they asked me for my husband's signature. Now, I didn't know that legally I didn't have to provide it, so I did.
Wow.
That's, you know.
It's still there.
Yeah, it's still there.
Yeah. It exists. Well, Tyler, tell me more. How are things today for women business owners?
I just think there's a multitude of things, and every business is very different. I think the landscape is different depending on the size of your business, depending on if you have employees or not, the laws are different across the board. What state you're in, it varies. That's why NABO is a national organization, because it's serving this really wide span of women and all types of businesses. And one of the things that I'm just speaking for myself personally, you know, with what I'm doing in events, it definitely is a challenge. It's a challenge for me to have, my thing is investing, like looking for people to invest in the vision, invest in the bigger picture. When I want to scale, what does that look like for me? Bandwidth wise, I'm talking energy level, family, all those things. What does that look like? And I think that's part of why leaning on women in NABO to help you navigate some of those things, having those conversations, having women that can coach you through it and work through it who have been there before.
It's like a mentoring.
Absolutely.
Program.
There's mentorship going on all the time. We have an institute also. We have a C3 site. So we have a 501c3. It's a nonprofit section. And there's all kinds of free education, all types of access, everything for women to just click on it and get it. It's an amazing resource library.
Yes, yeah. So the website again, please.
The website is nabo-ccc.org.
Spell that out, please.
nawbo-ccc.org.
All right.
Well, then they'll find all the educational stuff
on the national site. Yeah, the national site.
Which is nawbo.org.
All right. We'll be back with our guests. I'm Dave Congleton on AM 920, FM 96.5 News Talk, KVEC. Afternoons at the bottom of the hour, Tom Likas and Paul Verkammen join us to talk about the late, great Vin Scully and a brand new book that is an appreciation of the broadcasting legend. Meanwhile, we are back with our friends from the National Association of Women Business Owners. Dr. Leslie Kasanoff is here. Tyler Skinner is here. And they're looking to recruit. It sounds like, yes, there's some serious issues here, but the chapter meetings can be fun and social and networking opportunities. I want to hear about that, please. Tyler, let me start with you.
Oh, we're starting with me. Okay. Well, I was just Leslie and I were chatting on the break. We were talking about something to touch on is that we are a nonpartisan organization. I think that's a big touch point to say that we bring all the issues to the table and everyone is welcome. Everyone's welcome to join and be a part of that. And also, our meetings are fun. We changed the name to Business Brilliance, and it really is. We involve things like mini masterminds where you can...
Mini masterminds.
Yeah, you can present a challenge in your business and have a group of women around you helping you solve that issue, helping you work through those challenges right away, and you have tangible takeaways. And then we have things like networking, speed networking, lots of social events. We have master wine, we call it, afterwards, so we can go have a glass of wine. Master wine. Okay. Have a glass of wine on a Friday and wind down.
Hmm. The meetings for you, Leslie?
The meetings for me are sometimes the highlight of my week, my month. You know, when you're a solopreneur, you're doing it. Sometimes it feels like you're doing it all alone. And to have that group of women that have my back, that I know I can pick up the phone at any point in time. A lot of my closest friends are from NABO.
About 45 members.
Yeah. You have.
But you want more. People can join.
Yeah.
How often do you meet?
Once a month.
Our regular meetings are once a month.
Plus mixers throughout the county.
Yeah, and then we do have mixers throughout the county once a month, and then we throw in whatever other thing we can figure out to plan occasionally.
You're non-political, but do you lobby?
We do.
We do lobby. We lobby on a nonpartisan level for things that benefit all women, and it's a very fine line that national walks, because it has to be something that's going to benefit the woman business owner as well as the woman employee.
Give me some examples. What are you advocating for? What have you advocated for in the past?
Oh my gosh, there's like thousands of things. I can't pick, Dave.
Yeah.
This is hard.
Yeah. There's actually a board member who is the head of advocacy for our board, and unfortunately, she's not here.
No, but literally
anything that has been involved
at a state level or national level, NABO's had a hand in it at some point.
Yeah.
So that's really what it is. There's representatives at that level, both at the Capitol, the state in Sacramento, and representatives in D.C.
And you were telling me prior to all this that you even have local electeds who are members of your group.
Correct.
And have been over the years.
Yes.
So obviously they're inspired by this.
Yeah.
All right. I want to hear more about the fall conference. You have 50 women coming from all over the country.
We do.
All right.
Just imagine being from Iowa, and then you're coming to wine country by the beach.
Yeah, I've been in Iowa.
Yeah, they're going to enjoy it. It's something different that NABO's doing. It's the first time they're doing it. Something we pitched to them and decided to try out, because they normally have a big conference every year of 600 women in different cities like Louisville, Kentucky, or Austin, Texas. And I said, what about Central Coast of California? You know, we have a really great thing going on here. We've got direct flights from pretty much anywhere.
Yeah.
Come on over. And they were going, oh, we didn't even know about this. So once we put it on the radar, they're very excited, and it's happening October 3rd through the 6th of 2024. Mm-hmm.
And if people join the organization before then.
That's right. They can be a part of it. They can come meet women at all levels. So there's women in the circle. We have something called the circle. It's women with $1 million businesses and above. So there's that within NABO. And those women have separate masterminds and separate meetups and groups. But we're bringing everyone together because we believe that that mentorship, like we were talking about earlier, is very vital to every woman's success. So the women coming together to talk about things like access to capital, scaling, talking about leadership development, that's what we're doing.
Are there certain fields that women-owned businesses seem to thrive in? I mean, software versus retail versus... Or is it all over the map?
I think it's all over the map in NABO. It's all over the map.
There's women doing major government contracts. There's women in the nonprofit sector. There's women with 50 employees, hundreds of employees. There's trade show owner. I mean, there's everything in between.
Well, let me try this. Are the issues you're facing, do you have things in common? The challenges that you're facing?
I think women, there's definitely things in common.
Yeah.
I would say absolutely.
I would say just by virtue of the fact that we all want to be in the same room and we're all women looking to grow our businesses in the best way possible, that brings us together. And one of the things that I've seen when I was at the national conference a year ago, there's women with million-dollar businesses, multi-million-dollar businesses, and they're ready to give you the shirt off their back. They're ready to help you in any way they can. And that's something that's unique that I don't think you see everywhere.
Hmm. I've been here since 1987. I have come across more and more women who are either managers or in charge of their own business.
Right.
I've been around long enough that I remember Lynn Frady being the first woman allowed in a local Rotary Club.
Wow. Wow.
I remember the late, great Grace Mitchell becoming the president of Cuesta College in 1988, 89.
Mm-hmm.
And that, at that time, was the highest a woman had climbed in the county. She was the president of Cuesta College. That was a huge deal back then.
It was a huge thing. Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. All right. So other than the fall event, is there anything else you have coming up that we should mention?
We always have our luncheons. So we do a monthly luncheon. It's called
a very social group.
They're very social.
Yeah.
We've done things like yoga classes, hikes. I mean, we've done it all. But women, our Business Brilliance is at Madonna Inn every first Friday of the month from 11:30 to 1:30. We usually bring phenomenal speakers and programming to this. And we host those mini masterminds. We host opportunities for people to connect and get to know each other better. And then afterwards, everybody goes somewhere for some master wine. Hmm. And to hang out. So it's a Friday afternoon. You can go back to work or you can hang out and socialize.
Is it your sense from the membership that local businesses are doing okay?
Is it the sense from, I'm sorry, say that again?
That local businesses are doing okay or your members
really
feeling
variable.
Good?
I think it's so variable.
Yeah.
I think our members are doing good, but I think without this community and support, I don't know if we'd have as many surviving and thriving.
All right. When's your next meeting?
Next meeting, when is it? June? First Friday in June. Let's look it up.
First Friday in May.
You have a meeting in May?
Oh, sorry.
May.
I'm looking at June.
May.
You said June.
May.
May 3rd.
May 3rd.
May 3rd.
Yeah.
So people could come to the meet. They could join and come to the May 3rd meeting.
Yeah, they could absolutely join and come to the May 3rd meeting.
They can come to the May 3rd meeting and then see and then confirm that they want to join, too, if they want to take that route.
All right. Our thanks to Tyler Skinner and Dr. Leslie Kasanoff for coming in. For the National Association of Women Business Owners, Leslie, final thoughts?
No final thoughts.
Tyler, jump in and
say, hey, I am grateful for this opportunity because, Dave, the fact that you didn't know that we existed says a lot.
Yeah.
And the more that we can get out there and do things like this, we appreciate the opportunity because we want people to know we exist.
Do most men,
what we do.
When you mention this to men, do we know?
Guess what, Dave? You're going to become an unofficial official NABRO. We have NABROs. Men come to our meetings. Men come to our national events. And they're considered NABROs. They support women-owned businesses.
Well, I support you, but can I do it from afar?
Of course you can.
Okay.
Yeah, men can actually join, too. There's a supportive staff.
There you go.
Again, a standing ovation for Henry Aaron. So the confrontation for the second time. Aaron walked in the second inning. He means the tying run at the plate now. So we'll see what Downing does. Al at the belt delivers, and he's low. Ball one.
All right. Of course, that voice belonged to the late, great Vin Scully, voice of the Dodgers forever. He is also the subject of a brand new collection of essays called Perfect Eloquence, an appreciation of Vin Scully. Now, this is a brand new book that is going to be available on May 1st. It is a collection of essays. We are joined now by two of the many. I mean, look at their list here. Bob Costas, Oral Hershiser, Pete O'Malley, Al Michaels, Harry Shearer, Pat Morrison have all contributed essays about Mr. Scully. We welcome back to this broadcast two good friends of this show, Paul Verkammen, longtime reporter, first at KEYT. A lot of people remember Paul from his work on CNN. And we have the incomparable Tom Likas, broadcaster and podcaster extraordinaire. Paul, good afternoon.
Afternoon, Dave.
Thanks for joining us. Mr. Likas, how are you, sir?
Doing great, Dave. How about you?
I'm all right. Glad to have both of you on this broadcast. So, Paul, let me take the lead. How did this book come together?
Well, simply, Tom Hofarth, the longtime sports columnist and rather witty character, decided that he was going to put together this series of essays on Vin Scully. So Tom began recruiting people like Al Michaels, Jessica Mendoza, Tom Likas, myself, to contribute what he thought would be varying degrees of the Vin Scully story. So he breaks it down into innings. Tom had a lot of interaction, Tom Hofarth, with Scully. So at the beginning of each inning, he sets up what the subject will be, and he offers a lot of insight to Scully's life. For example, many people may not know that Vin Scully is extremely, extremely Catholic, a man of faith. He also suffered a lot of heartbreak in his life, losing wives, losing a son to a helicopter crash. But the most of the book is a celebration of Vin Scully's skills.
Yeah, in fact, you mentioned that it's broken down into nine innings, and both of your essays are in the ninth inning, The Tao of Vin, Inspiration and Influence. So, Tom, how'd you get involved in the book?
Well, I've known Tom Hofarth for some time, and we were just having a chit-chat one day, and he told me that he was working on this book, and I told him that I had written an essay about Vin with a very specific angle. I wrote it upon his retirement, and I sent it to him, hoping for sure that it would get into his hands, and I believe it did. And what it was for me, it was a celebration of a guy who really had an amazing influence on my life, and different from a lot of the other people, because I didn't grow up in California. I didn't have the good fortune to hear, I was too young to hear Vin when he worked in Brooklyn with the Dodgers. And then when he came to L.A., I heard his name, but I didn't know who he was. And in the essay, I break down that how the first moment I heard Vin, I was sitting on my grandmother's linoleum floor in the Bronx. She had the only color TV in the family, and we were watching the 1965 World Series between the Dodgers and the Minnesota Twins. And Vin, back in those days on the World Series, they didn't have like a Joe Buck or a Joe Davis doing the games. What they did was they used the home team announcers from each team. They would split up the innings. And so I heard, I'm sorry?
No, I was just reacting to that. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So Vin was doing like the first three innings and the last three innings from Minneapolis. And it was the first time I'd actually heard him work. Now, the irony of that is that my grandmother's apartment was on Fordham Road in the Bronx, walking distance from Fordham University, where Vin had his degree. And I watched him, and I was at 9 years old, blown away. And the result of it was that I wanted to be like Vin Scully. In every possible way, I went to Fordham University because I heard Vin Scully went to Fordham University. I wanted to come to Los Angeles to live because of it all began with Vin Scully. And I did. I came to Los Angeles in 1988 and lived there for the better part of 20 years. And it was all because of Vin Scully. It all started with Vin and ended with Vin. Everything from his professionalism to his style, the way he managed to keep from being an overt homer like the baseball broadcasters in New York, like Phil Rizzuto and Ralph Kiner, and these guys were all homers. And they were not really by definition broadcasters. They came into it later on. Vin was like trained for this, he was born for this. And I saw it, and it was my immediate inspiration. And he inspired all elements of my life.
That's incredible. So, Paul, what's your essay? And talk about how you first discovered Vin Scully.
Well, I first discovered Vin Scully because my Belgian immigrant parents worked at night in a restaurant. And so us four kids, and I guess to agree my grandmother, although she had no idea what they were saying, we were all huddled up and we would listen to Vin Scully. And I realized at a very young age, I went straight to first grade. Don't get me started on how my father goofed that one up. But I skipped kindergarten. I skipped nursery school. I get to first grade and I realize I have giant holes in my vocabulary because, of course, you learn English from your parents and they don't know the English words for a lot of things. And when I had this epiphany, this moment of realization that I needed to shore up my vocabulary, I didn't know it at the time, but I would go to sleep listening to Vin Scully. And as I write in my essay, I quickly learned why say the word good when someone like Willie Davis or Raul Mondesi makes a marvelous catch. And all through my school existence, I decided I wanted to be Vin Scully. I wanted to do something with broadcasting or radio, and I would practice. Anyway, Tom Hofarth and I, the organizer of all this, were in school together at USC. We were on the Daily Trojan together. I was the sports editor. And of all ironic moments, we're covering a football game at Stanford, and as only college students would do, we crash at my godmother's house. She's 100% Belgian, and to live the stereotype, she makes us Belgian waffles. And somewhere, Hofarth remembers my odd connection to Vin Scully and how he taught me proper English.
Well, what's amazing is to listen to the two of you who have had such long and distinguished careers in your respective aspects of broadcasting. And without hesitation, you're talking about the impact that this man had. So, Tom, let me come to you. What is it about Vin Scully that made him so special?
Well, the fact that he was just not only a good broadcaster, but so eloquent, so well-read, references to everything from 50-year-old show tunes to historical events and what have you. He was a well-rounded, well-educated, erudite individual who came from, and in my case, he came from the part of the world where I came from. He was from Washington Heights, a section of Manhattan, north of Harlem. And I was born there myself. So, I grew up in poverty in the South Bronx with many immigrants, including three of my four grandparents were immigrants. And, where I came from, being erudite or eloquent really was not a priority for a lot of the people I knew. I saw something that was just brilliant. Somehow I recognized how brilliant and unique he was. And he became the ultimate North Star for me.
Yeah, I can hear that. Paul, what about for you? What makes Vin Scully so special?
Well, one would be his storytelling. And in fact, I received a direct message from somebody who asked me today, Blake Dorfman of Santa Barbara, why is it that these modern day announcers don't seem to have the same storytelling capabilities? And something I know from having interviewed Vin Scully about this, and also this is in the book, Vin Scully used to dutifully grab a pair of scissors and cut out articles from newspapers around the United States about baseball, about the players, even about pop culture events. He would also then write notes and highlight them. It wasn't until about 1997, and Ben Platt writes this in the book, that Ben is now the Dodgers webmaster, and he teaches Vin how to use his computer and then, of course, download everything. And Vin says to Ben, this must have taken you hours and hours. And Ben says, no, it took 20 minutes. But that changed everything, and Vin was always so prepared. The other thing he did that was remarkable is Vin knew, frankly, when to shut up. Sometimes the moment is so dramatic that there's no need to say another word. You might recall the Kirk Gibson home run. In the year of the improbable, the impossible has happened.
Yeah.
He didn't talk for about a minute.
And that was intentional.
Correct. All the time.
Yeah.
Vin Scully always, always said, and he said this to me in an interview as well, I was fortunate enough to talk to him late in my career, that he did not want to step all over, as they would say on our business, Dave, and Tom, you know that well. He did not want to step yes. on the moment by blabbering. And that's the problem that a lot of people have articulated to me in reading this book. They say they find there's too much giggling in the booth, too much happy talk between the color guy and the main guy. And as you know, what's unique about Vin Scully, and this comes out again and again in the book, Vin Scully did this by himself.
Yeah. And Tom, talk about the point, please, about knowing when not to speak is as important as when you do speak.
Well, that is something that was a key to my own career, because there are other people who were not sportscasters who knew that. I'm going to name two. One, not as well known, Gene Shepard, who was the most well known as the author of the movie A Christmas Story.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Who also narrated A Christmas Story. But when I was a child in New York, he had a 45-minute nightly show where he told monologues. He spun yarns. I watched Gene Shepard in a live appearance at Fordham University when he was sitting on a stool on a stage and he held the rapt attention of about 300-400 people, and he was trying to explain the sound of the snow falling at his home in Indiana, and he said nothing for 30 seconds. And there was no shuffling, no noises being made. Everybody was held spellbound by that. And I saw that at 17, 18 years old. I saw him do that. And the other one, which might surprise you, is Paul Harvey, a broadcaster who also understood the value of silence and the pause. And but Vin certainly, I think, was the master, the best that will ever be and that ever was.
We are joined by two of the best, Tom Lykus and Paul Verkammen. They have both contributed essays to our brand new appreciation of the late, great Vin Scully. It's called Perfect Eloquence, An Appreciation of Vin Scully. This is going to be available on May 1st. You can go online and order it now. You can go to your favorite local bookstore. However you get books, place an order. This is going to be a great gift to give yourself, a great gift to anybody who loves baseball. We'll come back and continue the conversation on AM 920, FM 96.5, News Talk, KVEC. Once again, I'm reminded I have the best job in the county because I get paid to talk to Tom Lykus and Paul Verkammen about the brand new book, Perfect Eloquence, An Appreciation of Vin Scully. Available however you get books starting May 1st. Gentlemen, as I come back to each of you, Paul, let me start with you because both of you have met Vin Scully. Talk about the circumstances. Talk about the experience. What was it like to actually meet the man, Paul?
Well, first off, he's amiable. That comes out in the book again and again. Vinny always described himself as very happy, and he just was cordial. He made people feel great. I had interactions with him. And then later I was fortunate enough to interview Vin Scully. And it was a time of great contentiousness in the country. You'll recall we were having a lot of social justice riots after what happened to George Floyd. And while most of the interview with Vinny was about his technique and his career, what surprised me is I didn't think he'd want to take this on. I said, as a good friend of Jackie Robinson, what would you say right now about this contentiousness and what's going on in America? And Vinny said, no, I want to answer that. And he quoted someone else. He said, we will remember not the words of our enemies, but the silence of our friends. And then Vinny said, so there's a lot of people who are not speaking up, who are not telling the right things. And he was talking about Jackie Robinson. He said, Jackie Robinson spoke out, and he was not a silent friend. So it was interesting for me to hear what Vinny had to say about a social justice issue. And you had earlier played, Dave, the Hank Aaron home run.
Yeah.
I will paraphrase this poorly, but Vinny had said something about what a great moment this is that a black man in the South is receiving a standing ovation by breaking the record of an icon. And so all these things just get woven together in my experience, and I'm sure Tom's as well, when you had listened to Vince Scully for a long time and then spoke with him later.
Yeah. So, Tom, what was the experience like for you, please?
Well, I was lucky enough that the vice president of broadcasting for the Dodgers was my former producer, Eric Braverman. And that's how I met him. I didn't get the opportunity to interview him, but I was taken into his booth. And he was a lovely man, fascinating to talk to. All I kept thinking was, they probably put you through this 150 times a day. And I was just so appreciative that he took that time out to meet me like he hadn't spoken to anyone that day. I imagine that's how, honestly, I imagine that was one of his characteristics. He probably made everybody feel like a friend, because that's how it felt for me. And I had never met him, and I had never worked with him, and I had never been around him. But I felt like I knew him forever, and I walked out of there blown away.
How cool is that? Because, you know, they talk about you should meet your heroes, because they rarely live up to your expectations. But it sounds like for the two of you, Mr. Scully certainly did.
I would say he not only met
my expectations.
Yeah, Paul?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I just told you about Vince Scully stepping on people. Now I step on you, Tom.
Paul and I were saying the same thing at the same time, that he exceeded our expectations.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But then what about the fans, Paul? They must have felt a very strong connection to Vince Scully.
If you say these words in Los Angeles, people actually will try to jump in and finish it with you as if it's a chorus. It's time for Dodger baseball. When yep. Vin Scully passed, I stood there in the stadium wanting to honor him properly, and I just began interviewing fans for CNN. And among the things that came out of this was those invitations, that he was iconic. I felt if he ran for mayor of Los Angeles, he would win by a landslide.
Oh, sure.
One teary-eyed woman said, I cannot imagine anyone more popular in this city.
I can't either. Except maybe Sandy Koufax, but I'm dating myself. All right. So
and even Sandy Koufax, the legend that is Sandy Koufax, was largely not misrepresented, but largely created by and amplified by Vin Scully. The reason Sandy Koufax is everybody's favorite player, a lot of people's favorite player, was because of what Vin told us about him.
I had never thought about that, but you'd be right, because we learned about Sandy Koufax through Vin Scully, by and large.
That's right.
Yeah. Paul, you agree?
Yes, and in the book, listen to this, Bob Costas writes in the book that he receives a transcript of Vin Scully calling Sandy Koufax's no-hitter in 1965. In fact, I think it was a perfect game. And Costas writes that he thought he was receiving some sort of essay or manuscript. It's so eloquent, it's so rich, it's so well done. He only realizes later that this is just Vin Scully ad-libbing, as he always did, with what the book is named, Perfect Eloquence.
Well, that's the key. It was unscripted, typically.
Unscripted.
That's the genius of the guy. Not only was he eloquent and poetic, but he was unscripted. Wow. In comparison.
Another great.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Paul.
Joe Saltzman, the fine USC professor of broadcasting, he said one thing that struck him is he was talking about Bob Gibson, the pitcher, and he's on the mound, and he works extremely fast. And he said he pitches as if he's double parked.
That's a great line. I love that. Tom Likas, Paul Verkammen, saluting Vin Scully. It's a brand new book, Perfect Eloquence, An Appreciation of Vin Scully, a collection of essays. You're going to be able to get this starting May 1st, however you get books. In comparison, Tom, what about the announcers of today? We don't have a Vin Scully out there, do we?
Well, unfortunately, just like so many media today, social media has polluted the environment of broadcasting. And so a lot of the announcers now are more interested in getting clicks, and they're on Instagram with their personal lives and whatever. I think one of the great things about Vin is he did not dwell on his personal life. He did not dwell on what he did for dinner last night or what cities he's been to. It was never about Vin. And nowadays, when I tune into games, I'm here. And he does a pretty good job as a replacement for the legend of all time, Joe Davis. I hear more about his barbecues with his family. And that's nice and all that, but really there's a game going on. And kibitzing with the sidekick, who sometimes is Oral Hershiser and sometimes it's Eric Karros. But I really am more interested in what's going on the field or with the players we're looking at right now. Yeah. And no dissing of Joe Davis. I think he's doing a great job to be in such a tough position. But, the fact is, today's announcers don't focus as much on the game as Vin did. I hear more about beach towel night and Hello Kitty night and who did a commercial and how they looked in the commercial. Everything but the game.
All right. It's been a real pleasure to chat with Tom Likas and Paul Verkammen. The book is Perfect Eloquence and Appreciation of Vin Scully. Available however you get books starting May 1st. Paul, I got about 20 seconds for a final thought.
All I know is I'm sitting there at Dodger Stadium and I'm trying to come up with a closing line. I want to honor my, favorite ever. And I want to give context to the general viewer that doesn't know about sports. And I just said, Vin Scully is to art what Vin Scully is to baseball, announcing what Van Gogh is to art and Louis Armstrong to jazz.
I like that. That says it all. Tom, 20 seconds, sir.
Vin Scully is my North Star. He had a great influence on my life. I don't think he ever had any idea that he influenced anyone to this extent. Imagine going to college at Fordham University because Vin went there. Imagine moving to L.A. because Vin went there. He was everything to me.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad both of you were able to put that in paper and to share with us on the radio today. I look forward to reading the book. Thank you both for your time. That's going to do it for us. Thanks to all of our guests today. Thanks to everybody who called in. Thanks, as always, to Craig Hill for his help. And thanks to you for listening. I'm Dave Congleton. We'll see you next time. Somebody else.
The 920 KVEC Podcast Network is presented by the Slo County Real Estate Podcast with Hal Swayze. Up-to-date information on the local real estate market on your time. New episodes weekly at the podcast link at 920kvec.com and wherever you get your podcasts. California DRE 0111-911.